The policy question is not whether there is a free solution, it has how much society is willing to pay to reduce spatial inequality and preserve life in these regions.
Rural Japan is not just aging, it's emptying. My guest today has a warning about what this means for Japan's economic future, and maybe for our futures as well. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. I'm Tim Phillips. Between 2015 and 2050, the proportion of the global population over 60 is going to about double. And when we discuss the potential demographic crisis, shrinking working age population, the fiscal strain that's going to result from it, the rising pension bills, we generally think about entire countries. But Elisa Giannone of CREI and CPR is one of a team of researchers who have looked at how this trend is changing life in rural Japan and increasing the difference between its major cities and, well, everywhere else. She joins me now. Elisa, welcome to Vox Talks Economics.
Hi, team. Thank you very much.
What is the global trend, Elisa, on aging and the population reduction?
The world is aging rapidly and population growth is slowing, and the global share of people above 65 and above almost doubled from 5.5% in 1974 to about 10% in 2024. And the United Nations projection suggests it will roughly double again by 2074. But at the same time, population decline is no longer unusual. There are about 60 countries and areas containing about 28% of the world population in 2024 that already have passed their peak population before 2024. And so that group includes China, Germany, Japan, and Russia. So it's actually, it's a big group.
When we talk about these trends, we normally end up talking about Japan. Why is Japan so significant?
Japan is important because it is at the frontier of this trend. It is one of the oldest and fastest depopulating countries. Its population began declining around 2010, and in 2015, around 26% of the population was already 65 or older, and it was projected to rise to 37% by 2050. That makes Japan a kind of early warning case for issues that many other countries will face later.
We're increasingly hearing about this at the moment. How recent are all of these trends that we're talking about today?
These are recent in the sense that the population decline begins around 2010, but the regional divergence has been building for decades. In the paper, we can already see that strong spatial divergence between elderly and younger region started in 1980 and, you know, amplified around 2010. And the youngest municipality grew, but the oldest municipality shrank at much faster pace.
As I pointed out, we normally think about this in terms of the entire country. Why do we normally tell that national level story, not the urban-rural level that you've researched?
Because most demographic statistics, projection, fiscal debates are organized nationally. Fertility rates, mortality rates, pension systems, and aggregate population projections. But the national view hides the fact that population change is extremely uneven across space. And the paper emphasizes that economic life is local. Labor market, amenities, housing, medical care, retail, shops, and public services all operate in places. So national averages can miss where the real strain is concentrated.
What interesting things can policymakers understand, and for the rest of us, we can understand as well, if we understand what's happening at this regional level?
At the regional level, we can see the mechanism. Young people live shrinking areas, births becomes concentrating where young adults live, local amenities and services respond to the shrinking local markets, and the cost of serving the remaining population rises. That lets us understand not only population decline, but also the divergence in quality of life, public service costs, and eventually into regional inequality.
When regional inequality combines with economic stagnation, it can create political conflict too. In 2024, we spoke to Andrés Rodríguez-Bosé about how this mix was changing politics in Europe and in the US. Listen to our episode, Economic Decline and the Rise of Populism, from May that year, wherever you get your podcasts.
The regions that you compare, which regions, what data do you use to be able to compare them?
In our evidence, we compare Japanese municipalities, grouping them by how old they were initially, around 1980. Japan has about 47 prefectures, and as of 2015, about 1,700 municipalities. The paper uses harmonized municipal units to deal with mergers over time. And then in the more quantitative analysis, the special unit is prefecture, and the central comparison is Tokyo prefectures versus the five oldest prefectures, like Kochi, Shimane, Kotoshima, Tottori, and Yamagata. And the data combine Japanese population census data, migration information from the censor, and so on and so forth, and also with taxable income, mortality and fertility projections. So yes, there is quite a bunch of rich data we could get of.
It's great to have this data. And as you say, you've got these older prefectures between, was it 1980 and 2010, you do your research. How much of their population did they lose?
I would slightly rephrase this old municipalities because the 1980-2010 historical fact in the paper is mostly at the municipality level. Aha. Municipalities in the oldest prefecture lost nearly 0.3 log points of population between 1980 and 2010, which is roughly 26% decline. By contrast, the youngest quartile grew by approximately 22%.
And if you're thinking about it from the point of view of the people who are living there, especially young people who are living in these rural locations, is it a rational decision for me to leave, to think about leaving? Why would I do that?
Absolutely, because the return of moving is larger when you're young. The young person has met 15 years ahead, so moving to a place with higher wages, better amenities, and stronger labor market opportunities can play off over a longer horizon. And in the model, people choose locations based on wages, amenities, housing costs, migration costs, and expected future utility. And so younger people are especially responsive because their income is tied to the local labor markets and they have longer planning horizons.
And is this eternal migration story, which we see in many places, not just in Japan, does this tell the full story of what's happening in this divergence in Japan?
No. Internal migration is central, but it's not the whole story. So the paper separates social population change, meaning migration, from natural population change, meaning births and deaths. And when migration is shut down, the old municipalities still age and shrink, but much less. So the spatial distribution of births also matter because young adults become concentrated in central places, so future births become concentrated there too.
I get that. Now, for the people who are left behind, they're older, maybe they're less mobile, there's a reason why they can't migrate internally. How are their lives changing as this divergence happens?
Their lives could potentially deteriorate as working age population falls, local amenities decline, and so retail, health and medical services, education and other services become harder to sustain. So we find that areas losing working age population experience decline in amenities, which implies that economic well-being of residents who remain in these populating areas could potentially worsen over time.
And this is a problem clearly for policymakers. I guess it changes the problem of how they provide services in these regions as the character of those regions changes.
Absolutely. It makes providing public services more expensive per person. We find that at large evidence of scale economies, a 1% increase in population is associated with 0.53% decrease in local government spending per capita. And the flip side is that when population shrinks, the cost per remaining residents rises because many services like roads, schools, clinics, administration, transport have this fixed cost element. So even if you have one person, you still need to provide that public service. And that's very costly.
So, Lisa, let's try and work out what the policymakers can do about it. Now, if these trends continue, how much bigger is this gap between Tokyo and rural areas going to grow in future? It is going to carry on growing, is it?
So we estimate in our baseline model that Tokyo Prefecture population share rises from about 10% in 2015 to about 16% by the end of the 21st century and about 26% by the 22nd century. Instead, the five oldest prefectures together fall from about 3% in 2015 to about 1% by the end of the projection horizon. And this aging gap also widens. Tokyo's elderly share rises from 23% to about 34%, while the oldest five prefectures rise from about 30% to nearly 60%. So it's basically doubles.
And these are huge changes. I mean, you have a very long time horizon, but these are huge changes. If there isn't policy directly addressing this, can we also expect that quality of life difference that we were talking about, that to continue to diverge as well?
Yes. The paper measures quality of life using consumption equivalent flow utility, which is essentially amenity-adjusted real income. And so in our baseline model, Tokyo's flow utility grows faster than that of the five oldest prefectures, especially for the working-age population. And this reflects a feedback loop. Tokyo attracts more people, which raises productivity and amenities, which makes it even more attractive than it used to be.
So with this model you've built, you've experimented with policy that would redirect income from Tokyo residents to these prefectures. How long do you have to run a policy like that for?
Yes, your question touches a very important point, which is the length of the policy. Uh-huh. In the main policy experiment, we assume transfers to the five oldest prefectures that are about 100 years long, 15,
right.
Finance. By proportional labor income tax on Tokyo residents, and then reports outcomes in 2065. But we also compare, you know, how different lengths of policy could actually matter for the results. And we find that shorter lengths are much less effective to address these issues.
Because we don't normally think about policies as being 100 years long. We're lucky in some policies if they get to be 100 hours long at the moment. I mean, if you have this policy running for that length of time, though, how effective is it? How does it reduce the inequality between regions?
Basically, the transfer changes migration incentive and so population distribution. A transfer equal to approximately 5% of income to the oldest five prefectures nearly double population by 2065 in these areas, and population rises to about 5% of the total population in these areas and reduces this elderly share because lots of young people will move to these areas, and so the elderly share would reduce roughly by 1/3. This also increases working age flow utility in those prefectures, and while reducing the one of Tokyo too, but much less than it would increase the one in the old prefecture.
What we know about urban agglomerations is people migrate to them because their opportunities are better there. If we use policy in this way to reduce that incentive, that without the policy would be very, very strong, is there inevitably an economic trade-off here?
Absolutely. And this policy that do reduce potentially regional inequality, they might also reduce aggregate efficiency precisely because of the agglomeration feature you just described that would raise everyone wages and productivity. And so a 5% transfer to the oldest prefecture lowers aggregate income per capita by roughly 1.3% and raises aggregate fiscal spending per capita by a little more than 0.5%, which is actually non-negligible at all. So the reason is that the policy reallocates people toward less productive area, but also higher service cost regions. So both on the productivity side and on the service cost side, these both might have generated this trade-off with the shrinking inequality.
It's fascinating to discuss policy in this way with these very long time horizons and the sorts of measures that it might be important to take. Japan, as we said, is interesting because it got there early. Is your research going to be relevant for policy in other countries that are experiencing this same demographic shift, but just later.
Yes, Japan is early, but not unique. Many countries
have
passed their population peak, and many more are projected to do so in the coming decades. The United Nations projects that 63 countries and areas have already peaked before 2024, and another 48, 50 are projected to peak between 2025 and 2054. So it's actually, this is coming. And the broader lesson is that countries should not only ask, will our population age or shrink, but also where within the country will young people, birth, service, and economic activity concentrate, because that's going to be important in learning how to address potentially these issues without creating, you know, aggregate consequences and aggregate losses.
Yeah, there seem to be no easy choices for policymakers in this. Are they going to have to face that choice between accepting that there is a managed decline in regions, or swallow the economic cost, which is a large economic cost, as you said, out of reversing this trend?
This is a great way to frame the trade-off. Letting migration continue can raise its aggregate efficiency because people concentrate in productive areas, but also lower cost places, but it widens regional inequality and leaves some communities aging and shrinking population. Trying to reverse or slow the trend through place-based transfers can help the declining regions, but it has fiscal and efficiency costs. The policy question is not whether there is a free solution, it has how much society is willing to pay to reduce spatial inequality and preserve life in these regions. Acting earlier is potentially better than acting later when population decline is so high and fertility rates in some areas are extremely, extremely low and cost very high.
It's very, very interesting to think about long-term policies like this and their consequences. Elisa, thank you very much for talking about it.
Thank you, Tim.
The discussion paper is called Living in a Ghost Town, The Geography of Depopulation and Aging. The authors, Elisa Giannoni, Yohei Miyochi, Nuno Pachon, Jinle Pang and Yuta Suzuki. It is discussion paper 21447 at CPR.
Vox Talks Economics is a Talk Normal production. The assistant producer is Megan Bieber and our editor is Andrei Zagarian. Next week on Vox Talks Economics, combating sexual harassment in the military.